Namaste everyone, welcome to Recycle Rice, India's first sustainability podcast. This is Kashyap Devulupalli, your new host for this new season. You are listening to Recycle's very own podcast in its quest to get the message of environment and sustainability to you with ease. Entertainment and education rolled into one. We promise it will broaden your perspective and help you deep dive into the most important topic of our generation. Through Recycle Rise and all the guests lined up on our podcast, we will rise in our thinking, in our perspective, and rise in our commitment to the environment. This is a very special moment for all of us here. Guess what? It's the first episode of our podcast series in this season. And we're also celebrating Wildlife Conservation Week in India during this first week of October. In the recent past, we have had our guest speakers from different walks of life sharing their experiences, and today it's going to be more interesting. We have a very special guest with all of us here. She is Miss Aishwarya Sridhar. Hey Aishwarya, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you so much.
To all the listeners, Aishwarya is a 23-year-old wildlife filmmaker, a crowd-engaging TEDx speaker, writer, poet, travel presenter, a passionate conservationist, and the youngest girl ever to win the Sanctuary Asia Young Naturalist Award. Currently, she is a host for Nature for Future on the Discovery Channel India. Her work has been featured in international and national newspapers, magazines like BBC Wildlife, Guardian, Mongabay, to name a few. Aishwarya had chosen this career at a very young age and started traveling into the wilds, following her passion. Let's listen to her talking and sharing her experiences, what she has in store for all of us today. Let's get in. Welcome once again, Aishwarya.
Thank you so much for having me over here.
Can you take us back and share more about your journey of how you got into wildlife photography as such?
So for me, it all began very early on in life. My dad is a member of Bombay Natural History Society, BNHS. So I used to accompany him on various treks across Mumbai. Mumbai's wilderness at that point. When I was a very small kid, Mumbai was quite different than what it is now. And I live in Panvel, which is a pretty green and suburban location. So I used to spend my childhood watching butterflies and, you know, chasing birds and going behind everything that basically creeps, crawls and walks. And I used to have fireflies dance in my balcony. So it was a very a childhood which many children living in a city don't have. And very early on, I fell in love with the outdoors and with wildlife. And I think when I was 11, yeah, about that age, I saw my first tiger in the wild. And that really changed the whole thing. I fell in love with big cats. And from there on, my dad gifted me a small point-and-shoot camera for my birthday. And wildlife photography became a part of who I am.
Wow. It is so encouraging to see a young girl exploring her passion in this space. How is it like to be here, Aishwarya?
Oh, it feels wonderful. It has had its sets of challenges. Because first of all, being a girl is in a male-dominated industry is difficult. There are a set of obstacles and ups and downs that you have to face. But I feel that that's persistent in every career path that you choose. And when it comes to wildlife photography and filmmaking, yes, the society doesn't perceive it to be a girl's job. So you kind of feel people being taken aback when you tell them that you are a wildlife photographer and presenter. They feel like, oh my God, this is something which we haven't heard of. And then they ask you, like, are you okay with lifting a camera? Can you really shoot with a camera? And I'm like, yeah, I do it every day. So these are some maybe attitude changes that need to be seen in the society. Like, women can do any preferred job that they want. I think there's no stopping girls today.
Great. There is no stopping to a girl. Absolutely. So, based on the recent WWF's Living Planet report 2018, there has been a 60% of decline in this wildlife since 1970. So, according to you, what can an individual do towards safeguarding the species from its extinction?
In fact, it's not only, 60% decline from 1970, but scientists have also predicted that by 2050, almost 30% of the world's biodiversity is gonna go extinct. So just imagine, that means every year 1% of the flora and fauna will just disappear from the face of this earth. And to me, that is terrifying. We cannot definitely lead a healthy life if the web of life is not maintained. And that's a very intricate fabric. And in one small tear, and the entire ecosystem and the ecological balance will be tilted. And the worst affected will definitely be us, apart from the wildlife and the ecosystem being badly affected too. And we are seeing the effects right now with the COVID pandemic that's raging across the world. It's because we have tried to interfere in this, in the web of life, and, try to do certain things which have caused this irrevocable damage to our planet. So as an individual, as a responsible citizen, everyone can play a huge role in conserving biodiversity and preventing species from going extinct. Very simple steps. I will highlight a few over here. First is stop using plastic. I think single-use plastic is the biggest destroyer of our environment, because plastic remains. It does not decompose. Whereas our planet, I think very soon we will have more plastic than our planet if the current rate of plastic consumption proceeds. So definitely stop using single-use plastic. Switch to more sustainable things, like maybe a cloth bag or a refillable bottle, or paper. Reduce the use of paper. Go for digital means, be it e-newspaper, e-magazines, even for that matter, print less. So that way what happens is that a paper is made from cutting trees. So when you use less paper, lesser trees are cut. And in a way, you are contributing towards preserving the habitat of millions of creatures out there. So that is one thing. Plant more trees in your neighborhood. Take care of those. It's not just necessary that you just plant a tree. Also, you have to ensure that the tree survives and the tree remains healthy. So definitely plant more trees. Then lead a more sustainable lifestyle, like use less energy in your home itself. Try and switch to energy efficient appliances. That way, a lot of these appliances today come with your energy efficiency ratings. You see 3 or 5 stars. So that kind of tells you how eco-friendly and how much carbon emissions does that particular appliance emit. So that way you can go ahead and pick the ones that are greener compared to the ones that you are using. Very simple steps these are. Reduce your water footprint as well. Consume less water while maybe bathing, or even in terms of washing machines. Reduce the amount of times that you put your washing machine, you switch it on. That way you definitely reduce your water footprint as well. So these are very simple things, but they would go definitely a very long way in protecting our environment and reducing our carbon emissions, which is essential because we are facing climate change now.
Very interesting points you have shared, Aishwarya. These are very simple steps, yet will have a larger and positive impact on the planet. It brings me to ask this question. As a wildlife photographer, you have to travel a lot and of course into the deep forest, right? Can you please share with us how you make sure that your travel has a minimal impact throughout?
So sustainable travel is something that we all should follow, I think. It's not just someone who travels a lot, but even people who travel domestically or internationally. You can choose ways of traveling which will definitely have a lesser impact on our environment. Very simple, some of the steps that I follow, I will highlight over here. I fly less. And instead, I take more trains, especially if the journey is within India, if it is domestic. So that way, the carbon emissions by a train and aircraft, when you compare it, the aircraft is much higher. Whereas trains, some of them have electric engines, so that way it is much more eco-friendly. Then, whenever I go, I take a refillable bottle with me. So I don't buy plastic bottles. I just take my own water bottle, and you can fill it in your hotel, in the water cooling facilities that are there throughout. So I use that. That way you can definitely reduce your impact. Then another thing that I follow is carrying a garbage bag with you when you are traveling for picnics or even local shoots. So that way, if I have to throw any litter, I don't litter the environment, but I just put it in my garbage disposable bag and I come home and I throw it in the dumpster. So that way you reduce the littering and you see less plastic around you. So then there's also another very interesting thing that I discovered very recently was instead of plastic containers that we normally use to pack our food when we travel, India has come up with this arka leaf plates and arka leaf containers. So these are extremely disposable containers and they are also healthier than plastic, which you can use to eat your food from. And while you're traveling, you can definitely use these instead of, you know, plastic. And then there is, when you go out, you're going sightseeing, then try and use bicycles if it is available instead of taking a cab or a taxi. And yeah, of course, minimize your hotel laundry. This is something which a lot of my friends also have been practicing for a long time. When we go to a hotel, normally what happens is that we expect a clean bed linen and towels every day. But instead, try and prolong the use of these, because when you ask them to do laundry, a lot of water gets wasted. So your water footprint becomes really high. Whereas if you are able to opt for a longer interval between your bed linen changes and your towel changes, that way you are reducing your water footprint and also having a sustainable travel experience.
Great. It is so good to hear that you take along a spare bag to carry the waste back instead of littering outside. So glad to know that, Aishwarya. Imagine how our places would be if every one of us does that. And also, Aishwarya, we've seen and come across many reports on how we are choking our planet with irresponsible littering and its impact on human and all other species, especially on oceans and marine life. I'm so curious to know from you, have you ever noticed any such kind of incidents where plastic or any other waste that has had reached the deep forests and having its effect on wildlife?
Well, that is an interesting question. I haven't seen much when it comes to forests, because when you travel to tiger habitats or lion habitats, there is hardly any litter that is found over there. But yes, when it comes to our oceans, there is a lot of plastic. I was reading this study recently, and it's highlighted the fact that almost 100% of the sea turtles today have plastic in their stomach. And that is really sad to know this, because when you ingest plastic, it can really be bad, and it's extremely So when you ingest plastic, it can be life-threatening for the animal, even for humans. If you eat plastic, you die. So that is definitely not the kind of life we would like to have. We would like to give our wild neighbors, right? So it's very important that we take a conscious decision to not litter. And coming back to what you were asking about the fact whether forests have plastic and litter in them. Well, I haven't seen, but I will share one experience with you. When we were in this quaint town of Valparai in Tamil Nadu, people had thrown water bottles and chip wafers, correct? So that was on the road shoulder, and a group of lion-tailed macaques, which is a highly endangered primate in India and endemic to the Western Ghats, they came along, and one of them picked up this plastic bottle and began chewing on it. So by mistake, if the bottle lid gets ingested by the animal, it's definitely going to die a very miserable death. And I even saw one baby lion-tailed macaque pick up a packet of wafers which was lying on the shoulder and just tried opening and seeing if there is any food available. This is distressing, this kind of scenario, because these primates are supposed to be living a very healthy life. In they're supposed to be not eating the food that we consume. They're supposed to be living on the forest produce. Instead, you see them acting as if, you know, they are wanting to eat wafers and peanuts out of human hands, which is definitely not a right sign and not the direction that we want our forests and wild animals to go towards. And one thing that I find more common is littering is there in the forests that are closer to human settlements. So in terms of human settlements, I mean closer to cities rather than villages, because the rural Indians are more conscious, definitely. When it comes to city dwellers, we have this mindset that so what if you litter? Nothing will happen, right? So that is something that needs to be changed. Very close to where I live, you have the Karnala Bird Sanctuary. And it's extremely heartbreaking to see the amount of bonnet macaques and rhesus macaques that literally beg on the national highway for food. The highway cuts across through the forest, and you have these troops of macaques sitting on the road begging people passing by to give them something to eat. So that's an extremely sad situation, and I've seen a lot of animals choke on plastic in that particular stretch.
So sad to hear that. And you're also very instrumental in the policy level work in restoring lakes in and around Mumbai, right? Can you please share your experience there?
Yes. In fact, I have been working towards policy level protection for wetlands in Mumbai and Navi Mumbai, for that matter, for a couple of years now. I have grown up watching birds thrive in these wetlands. So it was really sad to see them disappear and being replaced with concrete. It's not that I'm against development, but I just feel that we should not trade our ecology for our economy. We should strike a balance. So GDP and natural capital should both increase, but they should increase together. It should not be that one increases while the other decreases drastically. It will definitely not have a great impact on our own life. So the problem surrounding wetlands is that we take our wetlands as wastelands. Our developmental authorities feel that wetlands are not even an ecosystem. They don't even recognize them properly. So this whole concept of these lands being treated as wastelands should definitely be changed. And there's this wetland called Panje at Uran, which hosts a huge number of birds every year. And it's also a part of the Central Asian Flyway, which has been taken up for protection by the Honorable Prime Minister of India himself. In the COP13 summit, he did make a statement in his speech that all the wetlands and the habitats on this flyway will be protected. So I feel that Panjshir as a wetland will definitely see a happier future, because the government definitely is supporting all of this. And the journey to protect Panjshir has not been easy. I have been ridiculed by the authorities when I went and took this matter to them and told them that this wetland needs to be protected. They were like, there is no such wetland. You're just making things up. It does not even exist. So then I had to take pictures with GPS settings and prove it to them that there is this wetland and it is on the brink of extinction. And even after that, the approach is very callous. You know what one of them told me was that we can, you know, change the course of migratory birds. So you can't do that. They migrate in a certain path, and that is decided by the positions of the sun, the moon, the stars. We even researchers are baffled because these birds take the same path every year. So there is no scientific data also which explains why they do that. People are still researching on that. And here is a person who is talking and telling me that, oh, we can just change the migratory path overnight. I was just wondering, are you going to put up signboards like turn left instead of turn right? I don't know what they were talking. But it's extremely disappointing to come across such kind of attitude that our environment is something which can be taken up for granted.
And a recent report by the United Nations Global Biodiversity Outlook states that the world has collectively failed to fully achieve a single goal set a decade back in conserving biodiversity by 2020, which means this year. What's your idea on the corrective measures and collective actions that we all can take to achieve our goals set for the year 2030?
Well, that's something which we all need to reflect upon during this lockdown, because we are right now, humanity is at the crossroads. Okay, with regards to the legacy that it's going to leave behind for the future generations. And I am sure we don't want our great-grandchildren to think back to their forefathers and feel that they left us nothing. Instead of a green planet, they left us a black planet with nothing to live on. So that is something which is very important. And my generation was born on the crossroads of extinction. Okay, we are living through the sixth mass extinction right now. And extinction is permanent. And it's extremely daunting to see that none of these goals were achieved, which was set about a decade ago. So that shows that we are definitely not heading in the right direction. And to me, that kind of future is terrifying, to be honest. We need to realize that we cannot trade our environment anymore for the sake of so-called development. I am not against development again, but then you should do development which is sustainable. And that is all what these goals talk about, be it in terms of climate change, in terms of fisheries, in terms of habitat loss and degradation. It says that we need to have a sustainable future for our coming generations. But who cares about any of this, right? So it, at least now it's high time with the COVID-19 pandemic raging on that we need to take a step back and evaluate the way we have been, you know, doing said things, and look at how we should do them in the future. As a collective, as a collective group, you can do a lot. At least try, if not going out and, you know, really working on the ground, you can take up simple measures like leading a sustainable life, like how I pointed out in the beginning, some steps. You can definitely do that. And when we hear our government or our policymakers talk about building a road through a wildlife corridor, maybe every citizen can stand up and raise their voice against that. I mean, why should we do this? Why can't we take the road around the wildlife habitat itself? Why is it necessary that we have to build a railway line right through the forest? Why should forests be cleared for dams? Why? Why can't there be an alternative? And every person has a choice. It's not that something is forced upon the person, right? So you have a choice to go sustainable, to go green. So you should take up that. And as a complete group, as a whole collective being, we should all say no to products that harm wildlife, that harm our flora and fauna. Say no to illegal wildlife trade. That is one of the reasons we are in this terrible mess of the COVID-19 virus. So I think it's high time that you stop the illegal wildlife trade. It's the largest when compared to, the second largest when compared to the illegal drug trade that happens. So that is one thing. As a individual, as responsible citizens, even if you're part of a society, your own housing society, try and protect the micro habitats around you. It can be as small as your own society garden, but ensure that thrives, because when that thrives, you have butterflies coming, you have local birds that visit your society. That way you are creating some habitat for those birds within the city to flourish. Even you see snakes, even they might be venomous snakes, do not kill them. Let them go. Max, what you do is you call a snake rescuer and you tell him to catch the snake and leave it in a forest which is very close to you. That way you are protecting that animal rather than killing it. So there's a lot that we can do, a lot we should do, because the biodiversity is ultimately the fabric of our living planet. And we should not take it for granted. Otherwise, the implications would be very severe.
True that. As said, we know what needs to be done, what exactly works, and how we can achieve good results. If we build on what has already been achieved and place sustainable lifestyle biodiversity at the heart of all our policies and decisions, including in COVID-19 recovery packages, we can ensure a better future for our societies and the planet that we live in. That's the end of the session today. Thank you, Aishwarya, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
It's absolutely our pleasure having you and listening to your experiences. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. I will see you on the next episode with another interesting session about environment, sustainability, and climate change. Your host, Kashyap Devlapalli. Till then, keep spreading love. Live sustainably, act responsibly. See you.